Welcome to an SBN special featuring Buddy Brannon doing an audio tour of the Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey. Buddy, it's good to talk to you today. And back in December of 2013, you went to New York to be with our friends HIMSS, Inc., or actually HIMSS International, to do some work with the UN.
Yes, I'm still the only guy on my block that's probably gotten to go to the UN. As far as I know, nobody else on my block has done that.
And you may keep that record for some time to come, actually.
I may.
Yeah. But while you were there, you went ahead and took a little trip on over to Morristown, New Jersey, and went to a place that I think you are quite familiar with before you went there, right?
Yes. I went to the Seeing Eye. I took an extra couple of days and went down to the Seeing Eye. Now, I've gotten two dogs from the Seeing Eye, my second one and now my current one. My current dog, I got an in-home placement with, so I didn't get to go back to school for him. So I haven't, okay. I hadn't actually been to the Seeing Eye before this past visit since like 2003 when I got Chet, my second dog. And so they've made a lot of changes, and it was kind of neat. I got to kind of get to peek behind the curtain, so to speak, and see some of the other stuff that a lot of times we may not usually get to see.
And you got to do this tour with someone who knows the place probably better than anyone, right?
Probably, yes. Yes, I was fortunate to have my tour conducted by Jim Kutch, who is the president of the Seeing Eye, has been the president since 2005, I think is what my interview told me, that we posted that back in March, our interview with Jim. And so it was nice of him to have made room in his, no doubt, very busy schedule to give me this really, really extensive tour of the campus and of the newly remodeled stuff.
Well, I hope our listeners have a chance to actually sit down and relax and be comfortable and definitely put on a good pair of earbuds or headphones when you do this.
Yeah, you got to do the headphones because this was recorded with the binaurals and it really adds a whole nother
kind of
element
a dimension
to it, I guess.
Yeah. And for anyone who is familiar with binaural recordings, and for those who may not be, there are times when someone's going to be over your right shoulder and you're almost going to have to stop to see if that person is in your room or in your headphones.
Yeah, it's pretty disconcerting sometimes, but it sure is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, I think we probably should stop talking and just let people listen to the tour in progress.
This lobby of the clinic is set up much like a veterinary hospital clinic lobby. A couple of rows of waiting chairs and end tables. There's two examining rooms in here. And one of the more unique features is that the ceiling is marked with paw prints. So it looks like dogs have walked over the ceiling in here.
It's very cute. It's one of my favorite touches. The best time, I was bringing a guest through who had a four-year-old nephew with them, and he spent all of this time staring at the ceiling, and then he said, well, he was trying to figure out how the dog got into it. He was very cute. But it is a nice little cute touch.
And then off to our left, we won't go in there because they're functioning, but off to our left is a surgery suite, a dental suite for dogs, x-ray suite, and a recovery area, an intensive care area, all part of the veterinary hospital.
Uh-huh.
So if we go straight through.
I know, forward.
To the right is the office space.
Good boy.
Not all that exciting, but if we come straight through, we're going to go into a long hallway.
Good job, Leno. Thank you.
You're welcome. I've got the door, Jim.
Thank you.
And let's just stop here for a minute. Leno is showing you the opposite side where there is another door out. So you could come straight through the hall and go out again.
Uh-huh.
But we won't. And there are four kennel wings in this building. Three of them go directly out the way you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
And one out down to our left, and then two to the right, and then the fourth kennel wing is just an extension of this hallway. If we were to go to the right and go to the end of the hallway, then the fourth kennel wing goes out down there.
Okay. The kennels are creatively named A, B, C, and D.
Yes.
How many dogs do we generally have in the kennels at any given
time? Each kennel
time?
Holds 48 dogs, except for Kennel A, which holds 44. But Kennel A is to our left. It's the kennel that the dogs first come into when they arrive on campus from their puppy raisers.
Mm-hmm.
And They go into that kennel. It's the closest to the clinic, and that's when they're going back and forth to the clinic for different procedures and physical exams. So being convenient in location is helpful.
Yes.
And because those dogs, the boys that come in, are not altered yet,
mm-hmm.
the boxes have been configured slightly different, which is differently, which is why
the
number
44.
Is different. Yeah, right. Exactly. Unaltered boys generally live alone. Everybody else, once the boys get altered, and the girls generally live in pairs because mm-hmm. they like company. So the different kennel configuration is to accommodate that. But once they're altered, everybody likes to have a buddy. So they get roommates. So we are going to go down to the right.
Okay, on the right.
You can see
good boy.
Kennel B is probably a mixed bag kennel. And let's just stop here for a minute. This kennel is where we have a special instructor who works with all of our potential breeding candidates.
Uh-huh.
So we call them test dogs. They're being considered for breeding. And so those test dogs are housed in this kennel. And those dogs go through a shortened training cycle just so that we really get to know each dog and what they're like before mm-hmm. we send them up to breeding. And the desire, of course, to send the cream of the crop
sure.
up to the breeding program. So we have, hopefully, the best dogs. That, of course, gets measured in lots of different ways because they have to meet a higher standard in all of the health requirements also,
mm-hmm.
as well as be of a very good temperament and show a good working ability. So those dogs are in this kennel. Adoptable dogs are also in this kennel. Dogs that have not made it in the program for some reason or another. And so until they're rehomed, mm-hmm. they stay here. And then we have some boarding dogs here. Most of those are here because their owners are having some sort of physical problem
right.
and can't manage them at the moment. And so we take care of them and give them a little work and
mm-hmm.
keep them until their people are better. And then we can send
this
them.
Must be where Chet spent a little bit of time when we went to get our daughter.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly where he was. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there are outside runs that are covered with, is it plexiglass, Jim? What's the best way to describe it?
Yeah, it's like a plexiglass roofing material that lets light through but keeps the snow and the rain out.
Which is okay. wonderful.
Yes.
Given those of us who remember having to shovel the kennel yards from the snow. And they're louvered so they can open so it lets air through and helps with the ventilation. It does still make it a little bit warm in there when it's really hot out, but it ventilates. And there are four play yards per kennel wing, and each yard also has individual single runs. So if it's a nice day, and while the kennel staff is cleaning the indoor runs, the dogs will be in their individual outdoor runs. They're only allowed to play as a group when they're supervised because
yeah.
they are just like little kids on the playground.
Yes.
And they'll all be playing really nicely, and then somebody will push somebody or somebody will want the same toy and a little scuffle starts out. And so there needs to be a playground monitor. So they are out in the yard running now, so they're having a good time. And then they'll come back in, they'll have their own as pairs in their indoor runs. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, would you like to go in?
Sure.
I will hang on to
hang
Leno
on to
for you out here if he'll be happy with that.
Yeah, he'll be good.
All right. Good boy.
Pretend to be good.
Pretend. Okay.
He and Vegas will keep each other company.
Yeah, Vegas does this routine a lot. Hangs out with the scissors. Yeah.
Yes.
Come on in. Chris Sutton is coming in behind us.
Ah, yes.
Hello.
Buddy Brennan?
Brennan,
oh,
yes.
I've heard the name. I don't know if we've run across him.
I don't believe we have, but of course we know who you are.
Of course. So Chris works with
nice
the test
you.
Dogs, the potential breeding
ah,
dogs.
Yes.
And so the dogs in this kennel.
Do you still work with the wheelchair
when
training?
We have them. We haven't
when
had
have
one
them?
In a while.
Yeah, they've been kind of few and far between, but Chris has done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so are we all excited, Ethel?
You just have to love people.
The boys are out in the yard now. And these guys are soon to go up to breeding.
Uh-huh.
They're at the end, near the end of their training cycle, having completed all of their medical screenings. And
what's the matter?
Ethel is an adoptable dog, so she's waiting for her new home. Ethel!
What's the matter?
Hi, good girl.
Hi.
So Ethel's a German Shepherd.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Zion, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Yeah. So, there are some boxes that are smaller than the others, so that if you do have a dog that's running individually, they can be in one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But there are little sliding doors between the two smaller boxes so that you can make it one big box.
Uh-huh.
So if you have two that you want to be together, you can use them that way too. So it adds flexibility to the setup. Most of the boxes are bigger double boxes,
mm-hmm.
and we'll generally keep a pair of dogs in those, and they are more content to have company. So there are two halves to each wing. So the four wings, each wing has two halves. We're in the front, and then the back is just the front. And between the two, there is a workroom, which has a sink, a scale. That's where the food gets set up,
mm-hmm.
and medications get kept there. Every dog has a cage card that has their name and tattoo number and what they eat on it. And they have med sheets and weight sheets on the boards that are attached to their box. And then we have...
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it?
I know it is.
Oh.
It's like, oh, poor me. Poor me. Right, Ethel? And then we have big white boards. There has to be a lot of organization to keep track of this many dogs.
Sure.
And we generally have about 220 dogs in the kennel. And now that the dogs have gone into class, we were up a little bit because we didn't have a class in last week.
Right.
For Thanksgiving. So all of the dogs that would be going into class were in the kennel, so we were more closer to 240 in the kennel. But
it's a lot of dogs.
It's a lot of dogs. And you need to feed them all the right amount for their individual needs, and some
right.
of them are on different kinds of food because of individual needs, different medications. We weigh them regularly just to give them all the individual attention that they need. Requires a lot of organization.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written down in multiple places.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be.
Yes. And they have hanging toys in their boxes, which are a bunch of different kinds of nylabones and rubber toys strung together and then hung from a cable that goes across the top so they can play with those and chew on them. So do you have any questions about the kennel?
No, that sounds...
Sounds good?
Sounds good.
Okay. Should we head back out?
Mm-hmm.
Go find Leno? Dad. There are big plastic jungle gym kind of things in the yard. They're made for children. They have little sliding boards and
mm-hmm.
stairs, and the dogs like to play on them and jump on them and hide under them. So it's entertainment for them while they're here.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.
We're back. I told the folks in the next couple of rooms that we would be coming through talking to them. So
okay.
there, here you go. Here's Leno back.
Hi, Leno.
We're in processing a dog in
Chandler.
Who's that?
Chandler.
Leno, leave
probably
it.
Probably Chandler.
Yeah.
No, hey, leave it.
So, Gene is just getting a dog, bringing a dog into the kennel, who is just coming in from his puppy raising family. And
good boy.
So she's going to take him down to the kennel and get him settled in.
Okay.
And
move-in day.
Yeah. Almost every day is a move-in day for somebody. There are usually a couple of dogs arriving for training.
Mm-hmm.
This is the bathing room, and there are four tub areas, and there are metal steps that lead up to the tub, so the dogs can walk up the metal steps and right into the tub. But the tub is more or less at our waist height,
uh-huh.
so you don't have to bend all the time.
Right.
That's such a killer on your back.
Yeah.
If
you're bathing a bunch of dogs.
Exactly. And you don't have to lift, because they can walk up the stairs to get into the tub. So
Leno, come.
Much more back friendly.
Yes.
So the dogs can walk right into the tub, and there's a little tie down so you can fasten them so they can't jump out. And the hoses are set so that you can turn the setting so that shampoo actually mixes with water and comes through, or then it's clear water. And there are blow dryers so that you can blow them dry.
But wow.
There are also a whole bunch of towels in here so you can towel them off.
Mm-hmm.
And you get them as dry as you can with the towel before you go to the blow dryer. So on the other side of the bathing area, there's a processing in area, which has small holding cages.
Boxes.
And so when the dogs come in, they go in there for a short time until the kennel assistant gets there to get them out and take them into the main kennel. So that's their route in.
Ah.
If we go down to the next room, Herring, on your left right here, if you stop for a minute, there's a big plastic cart. And
mm-hmm.
this is what the feeds get set up on. And there is one cart per kennel wing. So all of the feed for Kennel A will go on this cart, and then mm-hmm. Kennel B goes on a different cart, and you hear the busy feed room up here. Hello, ladies.
Hey, how are
you? We have a guest.
Hi.
This is Buddy.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
And Leno.
Nice to meet you.
Mary Beth and Summer.
Hey.
And they're setting up the food for the day.
Uh-huh.
And Summer's doing dishes.
Yeah.
In a very big way.
Yeah.
Right. So
that's got to be quite the production.
Yeah, it is.
It is. There's a lot of dogs to feed, and they all need to get fed the right thing.
250 dogs to feed multiple times a day.
So most of the dogs eat either Iams or Yukonuba, but some of them have special needs and do better on something else. Mm-hmm. So there are big tubs of different kinds of food that Mary Beth has to sort through and get the right thing.
Right.
And the right amount right. for each dog. So there are cards. Each cart has a card that tells her how many feeds of this amount go to who. And
uh-huh.
then, so there are this many bowls with two cups each, and this many bowls with a cup and a half each, and so on, so that all of the dogs get the amount that they need.
And then do they tag the bowls then? After
well, they're stacked appropriately.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
You can't get that stacking off where you throw everybody out of the whack. So they're stacked in a certain way with all of the bigger ones on bottom, and then if you have a different kind of food, they're stacked at the top.
Uh-huh.
So everybody has to know the system
uh-huh.
so that they can interpret it appropriately. And even the toys go through the dishwasher. So there are big milk carton crates with the toys that the dogs play with. They're mm-hmm. usually Nylabones. Some of them are rubber toys. In the crates, and they get run through the dishwasher regularly so that they stay reasonably clean.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any questions for the
no.
ladies here?
No, that's great.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, like, so this is, you know, keeping up the dishes and stuff for 200 couple dogs is probably a full-time job all by itself.
We are very fortunate. We have many, many volunteers who come in. We actually have more campus volunteers than we have employees.
Wow.
Who come in and do a lot of tasks for us that are just essential to what we do here. We have volunteers come in and bathe. We have volunteers come in and work in setting up food and in many areas.
So a lot of days there are volunteers busy in here, but today,
not today
the,
right.
Mary Beth and Summer are kennel assistants, so they get to do a little bit of everything.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah. So whatever's needed. And it is really nice that we have the volunteers to help out with this
yes,
stuff.
Yes, we're definitely very happy when they're yes. here.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Let's continue on. Thank you.
Thanks,
you're
guys.
Welcome. It was nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too.
And on our left here,
Leno.
Whoops, let's back up just a step or two, buddy. And we're right opposite the door to Kennel
hey,
C.
Leave it.
And Kennel C is where the dogs go to start training. So there is a brand new group of dogs in there. Brian's just coming out.
Hello.
Hello.
And this is Buddy, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Buddy and Leno.
How are you?
All right, nice to meet you guys.
Who
you is
too?
That?
This is, actually, I was going to ask, is it Mazzy or Maisie?
Oh. That's a good question.
Yeah.
M-A-Z-Z-I-E. It sounds like,
Mazzy?
It spells like Mazzy, doesn't
yeah,
it? But Mazzy sounds better.
Yeah.
Let me see if the paper copy of her report. She's got a great head. What
yeah,
a pretty face. Brian just started working with Mazzy.
Ah.
I'll see if there's anything phonetic on how they said it, Brian.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, thanks.
It was, it was said Mazzy for me, to me,
yeah.
which is kind of how it's spelled. Mazzy is a black lab,
mm-hmm.
a very very handsome black lab.
Yep.
And Kristen's coming out
hello.
With...
Hello.
Who is
hey,
that, Kristen?
Leave it.
This is Iliad.
Iliad.
Yeah.
Iliad, who is yellow. Is he a cross?
He's a cross, yeah.
He looks like a cross. So he's golden and lab.
Uh-huh.
Together. So Kennel C is where they go when they're just starting out their training,
mm-hmm.
and their first... week or so is here on the property where the instructors are working with them, teaching them their obedience and getting them used to the harness and used to pulling in harness. And then they start to go into town. Hi, Erin.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
And Erin has a little golden retriever, what's her name?
Lena.
Lena.
Yeah.
That's it.
Goldens are wonderful. My first dog was a golden.
What was your first dog? Who was your first dog?
My first dog was from a Left Coast school.
Oh, okay.
But he was
not to be named.
Yeah, he was wonderful though. He was he was a fantastic dog. His name was Carl.
Carl
with a K.
Yeah, that's a good name.
we've got a beautiful lineup here. A golden retriever, a black lab, and a German shepherd in the back that Sean just came in with.
Fantastic.
Who is Jade's sister, Jim? Sean has her, one of Jade's sisters with him.
Leno.
So Jade is the puppy that I'm raising.
Uh-huh.
So there are, the kennel is here where they're starting. All of the kennels have the same yards and kennel boxes outside that we looked at in Kennel B.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the hallway, there are computer monitors where the instructors can log in to say that they've worked a dog and what their trip was like with that dog, so that we can keep a working record of every dog, how many times they go out for trips, what kind of, how they did on their trips, and what they did on their trips, which is very helpful for our records.
Right.
Okay? Shall
okay.
we head back out?
Sure.
Okay. Actually, we can head out this door right here,
oh,
buddy.
Okay.
We go out a different way from the way we came in.
Good boy, Leno.
And we'll have to find a flight of steps going down.
You.
Thank you. He goes a little, to follow him, buddy, he's got it. There's a longer flight of steps straight ahead.
Oh, okay. Come on, Leno, hop up downstairs. Good boy. Forward. Good boy.
Good
job, Leno.
Head back to your right.
Oh, whoops.
It's a little confusing
Leno, right?
for him since he doesn't know the routine.
Right.
There is a sidewalk to the left. And so that this is the parking lot, and we'll cross that, and we can pick up the sidewalk on the other side. It's not real straightforward sidewalks and crossings.
Right.
So when the dogs don't know it, they look for the
good
best
boy, Leno.
That's it.
Works for me. There you go.
Good boy.
Good job, Leno.
This is where, because of the construction, the sidewalk's not back, so we're going to have to go in the
road again. Oh,
okay. Yeah, he's right.
Oh, he's right? Good. Okay.
Yeah. Bring him off. There's some variation where they can come off the sidewalk.
Vegas knows all the shortcuts.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it is.
I'm an old hand at campus now.
Who knows you're going to get over this way eventually, so...
Christmas tree is coming out.
Ah, good. We're passing the flagpole in the front of the building here, buddy. Which on a windy day you could hear better as the cables slap the pole.
Hanging limply today.
But it's limp today.
Yeah, not much breeze today. Good job, Leno. Inside. Good boy.
Maybe we could wait here if you have other questions for Peggy, and then we'll pick up the tour that I was going to start from here.
Okay.
Before we decided to do the kennels first.
So, Peggy, what you work with the puppy raisers as well, or is that?
No, you are correct. Canine development includes genetics, so pre-birth, early development at the breeding station, managing the dog supply, so trying to make sure that we have the proper number of dogs.
And the proper kinds of dogs.
Exactly.
Right.
So early development at the breeding station. So the projects that we do with our little babies to try to make them confident big dogs.
Right.
And then puppy development. And we do a lot of screening of the dogs during puppy development, during the puppy raising program.
So what does that involve?
Puppy raising?
The screening.
The screening. We have a number of reports that the puppy raisers fill out. There is a CBARC report that Dr. Serple has put together at the University of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And our puppy raisers fill those out at when their puppies are 6 months and at 12 months. And then we have a final report that we ask them to fill out that gives a lot of specific information for us about how the dog responds to different places and situations. We have a staff of puppy development coordinators. We have 6 puppy development coordinators. And every group of puppy raisers is assigned to a coordinator. So it's geographically organized, so that by counties. So one coordinator may cover 8 counties, and all of the puppy raisers in those 8 counties go to that coordinator with their problems or concerns.
And all of your raisers are right around here, yeah?
New Jersey, Eastern Pennsylvania, and we have 2 clubs in Northern Delaware. 1 club on the border in New York, Warwick. Mm-hmm. And that's our only New York extension. So we try to keep them within a relatively easy drive.
Sure.
The coordinators live remotely, so they live out in their territories, so mm-hmm. they aren't always, so those who are going out to Pennsylvania every day don't have to come here and go out to Pennsylvania.
Right.
They live in that area and can visit their families there.
And are the coordinators also volunteers?
No, they are staff members. They are actually paid staff. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, each club has volunteer leaders. So we are strongly supported by volunteers in puppy raising. Of course, all the puppy raisers are volunteers.
Right.
But each club has a volunteer leader, assistant leader, puppy educators who are experienced puppy raisers who can help the other puppy raisers in their club. But they also help keep the coordinator aware of any concerns, what puppies are looking really great or what puppies she should have a visit with and mm-hmm. see if she can help that raiser work through something or maybe give them a special project that might help a puppy get over a concern that puppy has. So the coordinators who are the staff work closely with the volunteers, and the volunteer leaders are strong liaisons between the staff member and the rest of the puppy raisers.
And so you work with all those, and also, of course, you mentioned with the genetics and making sure that you've got the right mix of puppies to go into training. And so your responsibilities are pretty much involved with getting the dogs ready for their formal training?
Yes, and then when they come in, the Washington Valley Kennels are part of my responsibility, and we screen the dogs further when they come in. So that's my job, to take a look at them all and decide which ones should go into training and which ones should maybe move on to another career, whether it's as a couch potato or maybe as a working dog in another job.
Yeah, you know, I've read that, you know, some of these guys have pretty interesting jobs.
They do.
I would have never thought, for example, that they'd have dogs employed to find cellular telephones in prison.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
Yeah, because normally you don't think a cell phone has a strong scent.
No.
But it does really have a strong electronic odor.
I guess.
And if you put it in a demonstration that we had here, if you put it in a jar and seal it all up, it makes the scent stronger. It condenses it all.
Oh, wow.
And then you open it up and you can really get a whiff. And then you know, whoa, it does have a smell. But the dogs are picking up that scent mm-hmm. in a tiny little degree, mm. and they do a great job at it. And we're always very proud when our dogs can go on to do another job, because they are dogs that were bred to work.
Mm-hmm.
They like working with people, doing things, and they get to make a contribution to people's lives in another area.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, my first dog's puppy raiser said, you know, these dogs have the best job in the world, because seeing eye dogs, that is, because all a dog wants to do is take its human for a walk, and these guys get to do that all the time.
And they get to do that. Right, and they get to be with their person most
all the
of
time.
The time.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it really is a great job.
And you used to work in training as well, did you not?
Yes.
You were a trainer?
Most of my career was in training. And I was a trainer, and then I taught apprentice instructors mm-hmm. for 10 years. And then managed the puppy development program for a couple of years, and then I moved into my current position. So it gave me a nice broad background to do what I do now. I assigned the dogs to the instructors,
mm-hmm.
so I was up there checking in today just to make sure.
So what does that mean? Like, clearly it's something more than a coin toss.
Yes.
Do you try to pick dogs to be compatible with particular people, to work with particular instructors? How does that work?
For the most part, by this point, we have hopefully weaned out the dogs that really don't look like good candidates, either for health reasons or temperament reasons. And we aren't losing too many in that phase these days, which is really nice. So
like percentage, what would you say go on to start training?
To start training, I think we lose, is it 8% in puppy development? And then we're down to close to 4%, 5% here as new dogs.
Yeah, I've never actually calculated it the way you asked the question, but about 65% of the dogs that are born in the breeding center make it all the way to success in the program. Of those that make it into the training department and are assigned to trainers, that number is 80 to 85% that make it the rest of the way through training. So we sort of tend to look at how many drop out in different phases.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 15% or so drop out after training has begun. it's clearly to our advantage if a puppy is not going to make it. We want to learn that as soon as possible.
Sure.
Exactly.
And both for the sake of the dog and for the sake of the organization. For the sake of the dog can get on to its new life, whatever mm-hmm. that's going to be. And for our sake, we can move on to spend our energy and resources on the dogs that are more likely to make it.
Right.
So we really work on the screening and puppy development.
Yeah.
And we have been fairly successful in finding most of our problem children while they are still in puppy development. So at this point, it's more unusual for me to have a surprise with, we call them new dogs in mm-hmm. that phase between puppy development and training, for me to have a dog that I see that really looks like it's obviously not a good candidate for training.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do, then I can take that dog out of the program before I assign. And again, better for the dog and better for the program.
Right.
Once they get assigned to instructors, the how I distribute them, everybody may think is totally random, but it's not. First of all, there needs to be a relatively good gender split because of kenneling situations. You
sure.
generally don't want to kennel two boys together. We like to do alternate gender
uh-huh.
in kenneling arrangements. So if you don't want to give all boys to one instructor and all girls to another. So
uh-huh.
if you can do that half and half. And I also try to split up the breed
mm-hmm.
so that one person doesn't get all the Labradors and one person gets all the German Shepherds.
Right.
So we shift that around a little bit. And I also try to, from what I can tell about the dog, distribute the dogs that look like very enthusiastic, buoyant dogs that might be really pulling hard,
mm-hmm.
and those that look like more gentle dogs that are going to walk slowly.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always easy to tell in looking at a dog before it starts training, but you don't want to give all of those big, strong dogs to the same person because you'll kill them.
Right.
So.
And it helps us later when class comes in, because if each instructor has a balance of fast dogs, slow dogs, ones with strong pull, ones with softer pull, then we're better able to have a mix for the students that would come into that class.
Sure.
Yeah. Although the instructors can put in their partner's dogs, so they
mm-hmm.
are not
yes,
limited
into class,
to their
right.
own dogs when they go into class, but it's nice to know, and it's nice to have a balance and a mix.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you ask the question about assigning according to a particular personality, I may do that on the extremes.
Uh-huh.
So if I have a very strong dog that I think can make it with just the right person, then I would probably handpick an instructor for that person, for that dog. Or on the opposite, a very gentle natured dog who's very careful and really doesn't want to make a mistake, then I might try to give that dog to an instructor I know is particularly good with that type of dog. Because
mm-hmm.
all of our instructors need to be able to work with every kind of dog.
Sure.
But just
clearly
like
everybody
most
has.
Venues, exactly. Everybody has strengths and weaknesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for the dogs on those extreme edges, I try to go with the person who has a strength in that area to maximize the potential for success.
Good deal.
Yeah, so I probably overthink it tremendously, but I do spend a lot of time thinking about my assignments.
Well, I guess you'd kind of have to. And then, you know, since you've had the experience where you were at the sort of the other end of it, actually working with them and getting them ready for class, you kind of have,
yeah, that's,
you know,
essential.
Have that,
that really
perspective.
Is. I think that my background in training really is important to my being able to make good assessments and good reads on the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And just like in every job, we all have different strengths and weaknesses.
Sure.
And reading new dogs is something that I can do reasonably well.
Okay.
So we get to there, and then I also manage the... I juggle the dogs throughout training, so I get to pay attention to the dogs for a long time, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they don't make it in the program, the adoption program is part of canine development also.
Oh.
So those dogs that don't make it in the program are adoptables, and we find homes for them.
I'm sure you've got a waiting list as long as your arm.
We do have a long waiting list. And the puppy raiser always gets the first priority. So if the puppy raiser who raised that puppy wants the dog back, they get the dog back.
Mm-hmm.
And at any phase during the program, if the dog is taken out of the program, the puppy raiser gets the first chance to take the dog back. If they do not, and some puppy raisers have raised a lot of puppies, so they may have taken
yes,
back
a few.
Yes,
they have. I've seen some that have raised, you know, 20 and 25, 30,
or,
like
or
just,
60 or 70.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think 60 or 70 something is our record, I think.
That's amazing.
Who was it? Evelyn? Her family was over 100.
Wow.
But she took foster children. Have you ever heard her story?
Yes, I have.
And
go ahead, tell Buddy.
She took in foster children. And
all of her life.
and she felt that it was good for them, good to build responsibility for them to raise puppies. And she would have multiple puppies in the house because each child that she brought in would raise a puppy. And so because they often had multiple puppies in the house and they had children coming and going all the time,
mm-hmm.
her total was up to 100. So
wow.
that was truly an exception, but
yeah.
she was an exceptional lady.
Well, I'll say.
We do recognize any puppy raiser that's done more than 21 with a 21 club designation.
And it's a big club.
And it's a big club.
It's somewhat amazing. So the puppy raisers get the opportunity to take the dog back if the dog doesn't make it in the program. If they don't, then we always like to send the dog on to another working home if it fits the bill. And if there's someone looking, that's also necessary. Sometimes we have dogs that look like they would be good working dogs, but nobody in the area needs one.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we look for good pet homes for them. And we do have a very long waiting list of people who want our dogs.
Yeah.
So we tend to be able to move them along and into really good spots fairly quickly.
Good deal.
Yeah, so I get to see the dogs from beginning to end for the most part, which is nice.
So what would you say is the most rewarding aspect personally of what you do?
Well, I think it's seeing that team walk out of here after class and do whatever they can do. It's the mission.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's pairing good dogs with good people and helping them to do things that they might not be able to do or do them better than they might be able to do without the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point behind it all. Now, at this point, my job is primarily with the dogs. And so a more fine point would be making the best dogs I can, getting the best dogs we can get to put into training and managing them in the best way through training to maximize their potential as guides.
Great.
And it's always, I'm always watching that match list. Who went
yeah.
into class? Where are they? Because I do know a lot of the graduates, and so
mm-hmm.
I get to see...
And all the dogs.
And all the dogs. So who went in?
And of course, it just amazes me that, you know, that y'all remember everybody that comes through here. I mean, not just the dogs, but the people as well. Like, you know, what, 3 years since I saw Brian McKenna, 10 years since I've seen John Keane.
Uh-huh.
And they both recognized me right off. Now, I don't know if Jim prepped them ahead. But,
there might have been a little... No, we do, when graduates come back to campus, we do share that they're back. Mostly because if somebody was in town today and at the end of the day came back and said, I didn't even know Buddy was here and I really would have liked to have said hello. So when a graduate's coming back for some reason, we do send a note around and say, so-and-so will be on campus in case you want to say hello.
But that's still really cool.
Yeah,
that,
and we really do. You remember the people that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you get so, because you see so many people through...
You see so many people, but it's such an intense period
when you're living
in class together and working together that's
that
out.
It is.
So, for you and for us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, it makes the seeing eye of the family that it is.
That's for sure.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't. Do you have anything that you'd like to tell people?
I can't think of anything we haven't touched on.
Well, cool. I appreciate you taking some time.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I enjoyed
showing you around. Okay.
And it was great meeting you. I've heard your voice on all the holiday recordings.
Yes. That Greg was chasing me for this one. <That's> I wasn't here the day they did it. He kept saying, "You can come down this morning," and then something would happen, and somebody would call me, and eventually we did get it done.
Oh, very good.
It's nice. It's nice to know that people are listening. And
I listen to it every year.
Good.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it was nice to talk to you, buddy.
You too.
Enjoy the rest of your tour.
Thank you.
And maybe I'll see you before you head out.
All right.
Okay?
I hope so.
Bye-bye.
We'll be around the rest of the afternoon. Thanks, Peggy.
Okay.
Thanks, Peggy. All right.
So let's wait till this car leaves, and then we'll start here on this building.
Okay. Leno, come on.
All right. So we're standing on the
front porch, right outside the front main door of the building. We call this building the main house because it is the house for our students when they're here in training. Mm-hmm. We're on a special area with paving stones that we call the path to independence because everyone comes in and leaves over this sidewalk. And these bricks are engraved with maybe the name of a dog, maybe the name of a graduate, maybe a message. And there are multiple size bricks. And this was a fundraising campaign that we started 3 years ago and offered supporters the opportunity to buy a brick on the walk to independence. It was so successful that we've continued it every year. So there are, to your left and right, there are a lot of blank bricks with nothing engraved in them.
Ah.
And in future years, as more people are interested in buying bricks, we will take those up and replace them with engraved bricks. They're very nicely done. The bricks are engraved, and then they're filled. The engraving is filled with a compound that prevents water from getting into the brick and cracking it and so on. One of the additions from the renovation is that this very front door area is now covered. We have pillars here to my right and left, and there's a canopy so students can stand here waiting for a van to catch a trip into town for training. We have some very nice benches here that were donated by one of our graduates years ago. The building, even after the renovation, is still shaped like a very, very wide print capital letter H. And so as we face the front door, we are facing north. We're entering essentially from the south, and we're entering in the middle of that very, very long bar that goes left and right between the two columns of the H. To the left, the west, is the Eustace Lounge, the dining room, kitchen, and a new multi-purpose room. And to the right is the dormitory wing and student area. Okay, so we're back in the main foyer. At the front of the building, and as if we had just come in the front door. And if we turn left and go now to the west side of the building, we'll head down the hallway towards the dining room. Vegas, left.
Leno, left.
Good boy.
Good boy. Good boy.
Along this hall, my office is here on the left. On the right is a conference room, the Colgate conference room, named after Colgate, who was our first chairman of the board when the CMI was founded.
Hey,
so on the right is the Colgate conference room, named after our first chairman of the board at the CMI.
That would be Henry Colgate.
Indeed. Photocopy room on the left, and we're now at the end of the hall, about to enter the Ranger dining room. To our right, heading north, is the kitchen, all remodeled, a new area. If you turn right, let's go that way
right
for a second.
Good boy.
Good boy, Vegas. We're heading back the hallway along, and then if you go left,
and
a little
left
bit further, there's an open door on your left coming up.
Left. Leno, left. Good boy.
This is new. You can step in. This is new. This is a servery. It's essentially a room with steam tables and a slide for you to slide a cafeteria tray along.
Mm-hmm.
All of our students are served meals by our serving staff, but our staff, who come into the dining room for lunch, can come into this servery and pick up their own meals on the way into the dining room. We also have the opportunity to have a session or two of cafeteria tray handling training for students when they're in class.
Ah.
So many of our graduates find themselves either in college, university, or work cafeterias where they need to manage the dog and manage the cafeteria tray.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the opportunity now, using this servery, both to get the staff in and out of the dining room more quickly, but also have the training opportunity. The noise you hear in front of you is the door from the servery into the kitchen, and they're probably working on the class dinner already back in there.
Ah.
Thanks,
Leno. Good boy.
there's a third door out of that survey area that actually enters into the dining room. We're not going that way. We're coming back down the way we came in. And
Well, I know.
Right here is the dining room area. If we continue past the dining room, now headed back out towards the road, south in other words, this is our hall of history that we're passing through. And in this area, we have a lot of historical elements of the program. We have Morris Frank's original harness, made totally different than the Seeing Eye or any guide dog harnesses of today.
It reminds me, do I get to see the replica later?
Yes, I can show you the replica. The Morris Frank one is so delicate that we keep it under glass, but we had our harness maker make a modern replica of Morris's original harness that we can pass around because it's made out of 21st century material and is can stand up to a lot of handling. The most notable difference is that the solid U-shaped handle that most harnesses of today are using did not exist in the original harness that Morris used. The body part was similar to what we wear today on the dogs, what the dogs wear today, but instead of the rigid handle, they had basically a soft, almost a leash that came off the back of the harness. So in order for the dog to signal the blind person to stop, the dog actually had to stop several feet before the curb. Then the person would overwalk the dog until they felt a backwards tug on that soft leash. And if the dog did it right, just then you were at the curb of the street or the beginning of the...
No wonder Morris almost fell down the elevator shaft.
Well, also, no wonder that in the early days, individuals used both the dog and a short cane in their other hand. A lot of progress has been made in harness design since then, and now, of course, today, besides the regular harness, we have several versions of offset handle and ergonomic handles and different shapes for people with various issues, wrist or arm issues that still allow them to comfortably work with their dog. Those are specific items for specific conditions, but the general harness even itself has improved so much over the years.
Yes.
We passed through the Hall of History. There's another door to our left here that goes outside. This goes to our leisure path. It's a third of a mile asphalt-paved path. Students can walk while they're in class. There's a couple of gazebos out there where individuals can sit and rest for a while or enjoy the weather. And it's a great place to just blow off some steam with your new dog. It's a chance to build some confidence in both the dog and the person. It's safe, there's no traffic, there's no obstacles, and it's quite, especially on days maybe slightly warmer than today, it's used extensively. Many of the staff members go out and take a couple of loops around the leisure path at lunch as well. On straight ahead is the Dorothy Harrison Eustace Lounge. This is a living room environment, a large, large living room environment. And in here, our students can entertain guests during weekend visiting hours when students can invite guests to come in. We have a grand player piano in here. We also have a grandfather clock in here.
But is the player piano a mechanical one?
No, the player piano is a modern digital player piano in here. We used to conduct a lot of our public educational sessions in here, but we have a new room that I'll show you next for that.
All right, Leno, come on. Forward.
Left, left.
Left, left. Good boy.
We're entering the Morris Frank room. This is a room that serves multiple purposes for us here at the Seeing Eye. We can set this up as a meeting room if an extra meeting room is needed. We can set this up as a private dining room if we're having a meeting lunch. And when it's not being used for those things, it serves as a pre-function room for folks going into our new multi-purpose room. Also in this room, we have the original door from the Seeing Eye when we were located in Whippany, New Jersey, from 1931 to 1965. We had a property that was an old mansion, an old house there, and it's long since been torn down, and there's a technology company on the property now. But we kept the door, a beautiful leaded glass door.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad you kept the door. So does this, I wonder if this new company knows...
The new company indeed knows of the legacy because 5 years ago, for our 80th anniversary, we completed negotiations with both of the Seeing Eye initial locations. From 1929 to 1931...
Oh, that's still there.
We were at 315 Union Street in Nashville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And in 5 years ago, for our 80th anniversary, we put a historical marker on the sidewalk outside of that property. Today, it's a big hotel. When we were there, it was an office building. And then, similarly, the address at Whippany Road, we worked with the Whippany Historical Society here in New Jersey and put a historical marker on the side of the road where that building used to be. So, yes, I think they know, and if they don't know, they can read the sign.
There you go.
Vegas, forward.
I know, forward.
Good boy.
Good boy. Left. Good boy, Leno.
We're entering our multi-purpose room. This room... is new construction. This used to be an outdoor patio. It's now a room that can be set up in two configurations. We can set it up with rows of chairs and seat about 70 in here for educational presentations or large staff meetings. The entire right-hand wall is windows overlooking beautiful Washington Valley. Very picturesque view of the valley from here. We're slightly on a rise overlooking the valley. At the front of the room, a lot of up-to-date audiovisual equipment. We have a drop-down screen. We can do we can do Skype video from here. We have a camera in the ceiling. We have a projector. We have a 10 or so speakers that can be, I'm sorry, microphones that can be put in here. We can do speakerphone conferences. We can also configure the room as a meeting room. We take the chairs out and then put a rectangle of large tables in the middle of the room. Mm-hmm. At the front of the room, to your slight left, the way you're facing, there are four large paintings of the stages of our program. The four stages of our program. There's a picture of several puppies at the breeding station at play. There's a picture of a dog being raised by a puppy raiser. The third picture is a dog working in downtown Morristown with a trainer, demonstrating the training phase. In fact, that dog is working in an overhang, and the instructor is teaching the dog the overhang. And the last photo, or the last painting, is a picture of a graduate living her life. It's a university student, so it's a picture of a university student on a college campus with her dog.
Ah.
Outside this room, on two of the four walls, is a patio, a veranda, and it's covered. And so there are doors out of this room, out onto that veranda, and in summer weather, we can spill out there. We do a lot of educational programs for local schools. We bring grade school children in literally by the busload, school bus load, of course.
Of course.
And they come here and learn about what we do at the Seeing Eye, a little bit about blindness awareness, and have a great opportunity to be educated. We also conduct several fundraising events in here. Clearly, it's expensive to do what we do, and we rely a lot on fundraising. So this is a great room for us to be able to do some of those things. Let's head back out. Good boy, Vegas. Forward.
I don't know. Forward.
All right, back through the Morris Frank room. And past the door to the Eustace Lounge. Left.
No, no, left.
Good boy.
Good boy.
And we're now back at the dining room end of the hall again. If we turn left here, we'll step into the front of the first of our two dining rooms. This is the Ranger dining room, the first one that you enter from the hallway, set up with five large tables, large rectangular tables. There's a fireplace at the far wall, and beyond that far wall is our terrace dining room, similarly set up with the same number of tables. And staff and students have lunch here together. Students have breakfast and dinner here as well.
Mm-hmm. Dinner smells pretty good.
Yeah, dinner does smell pretty good. Let me take you to some of the areas that are normally not toured.
Okay.
But let's go downstairs into some of the administrative areas. We'll go left up here.
Good boy, Lena.
Hello.
Lena, left.
Good boy.
Good boy.
Door on the right.
Got it.
We're in the center stairwell, right behind the front lobby. If we go left and up this flight of stairs, David, forward.
Good boy, Leno, forward.
Hello, buddy.
Hi.
Jeff McMullen.
Oh, hi, Jeff.
How
nice.
Are you?
Nice to meet you.
Good boy. Forward.
Good boy, Leno, forward. Where is the good boy?
Opening another door coming towards you. There you go.
Good boy, Leno.
Forward, right. Right.
Good boy, Leno.
Let's turn left in here.
Left. Good boy.
All right, we're standing upstairs on the second floor over the front lobby. And up here are three sleeping rooms that are not part of the dormitory. And these are staff rooms for those emergency snow nights or times when a staff member may be necessary for a staff member or two or three to stay overnight.
Okay.
And so these are set up similar to the dormitory rooms, but again, it's not in the dormitory section of the building. It's in this small section over top of the main lobby. So three bedrooms up here, all with private baths, and otherwise are very similar to the dorm rooms. There's a bed, and you passed the bathroom when you came in. Front windows that look right out over the front parking lot, right out the front door, essentially on the top level above the front door. Vegas. Good boy.
Good boy, Leno. Well, I know. Forward. Good job.
Good boy.
Good boy, Leno. Forward.
We're going to go all the way down the stairs to the basement in this center stair tower.
And forward. Good boy.
Good boy.
Downstairs.
Forward.
Good boy. Leno, forward. Good boy.
There's the door. On your left.
Got it.
We're now in the basement under the main lobby. There's a hall down here that basically parallels the main hall upstairs on the main floor.
And
to our left, heading basically down under the training department offices towards the dorm wing, we have a commercial laundry. This is not the same as the student laundry that you saw earlier, but this is the laundry for our housekeeping staff to do. Certainly, Weenyeway?
No.
This is the This is the staff laundry for the housekeeping staff to take care of all the bed linens and the towels and so on, as far as running the dormitory side of our organization. Down to the right, heading down now under the hall towards what would be the dining room upstairs, we have a boiler room on the right. So if folks want a tour of a boiler room, it's probably very similar to all other boiler rooms. One of the things that our renovation allowed us to do for the first time is simultaneously run heat and air conditioning.
Oh.
This is important to us because prior to the renovation, we were in a condition where we had to decide whether the whole building was going to be running in air conditioning or heat mode. And if you got it wrong and went to heat a little too early in the fall and had a hot day, you were in trouble. And we also bring in students literally from all over the U.S. and Canada. So when the student from Texas wanted a little heat on the same day that the student from Nova Scotia wanted a little bit of air conditioning, we couldn't do it. Now
you can.
The new system can. It's a double loop system in the whole building. You can in your individual room decide if you want heat or air conditioning today, and the boiler room is capable of delivering that. Plus, we gained significant efficiencies in the operation as far as energy costs with all new windows and just generally improved efficiency in the mechanical side. Further beyond the boiler room is our shipping and receiving area.
Yeah.
A lot of materials come in and out of the organization, food, so on. We ship out supplies a lot. And then we have a lot of mail that we process. And so also on our right down here is the mail room. Staff members have individual mailboxes down here. And in addition to that, there's what's very much like a post office window, glass window right here. It's a place where staff members can come and talk to the staff that runs the mail room. Down at this floor also, we have our data center. Prior to the renovation, our data center was in a makeshift room, let's say, giving it the best possible spin that I can. Remember, the building was originally constructed in 65, and nobody thought about computer rooms at that time. So we had to improvise, and we had our telephone systems and our web page, you know, our entire web server, all of our dog tracking databases and donor tracking databases in computers on servers that were really in a computer room that wasn't intended
Hello.
To be.
Hello.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good.
We're taking a quick tour of your domain here. I'm showing the loading and receiving area in the mail center. This is Buddy Brannon. He's one of
Hi.
Our graduates.
Hi. I'm Jimmy.
Nice to meet
Erie.
You.
Jimmy's responsible for all of our shipping, receiving, mail in, out, and so on.
Ah, very good.
And right now
yes.
we're getting...
And office supplies.
Right now we're getting lots of December donations. This is a very high time for us to receive those
year-end... Yeah, end-of-the-year stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it started earlier this year. Checks start coming
Get your tax right deductions in.
Get your tax deductions in, exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, I'll see you later.
Thank you.
See you
later. Jeff. Hi, how
you doing? Back to the computer center. So as part of the renovation, we built a data center for the purpose specifically of being a data center. So we have our web server and everything in a much more protected space, and it's actually underneath the new multi-purpose room that you saw upstairs.
Ah.
And we can go down that way if you wish. It's up to you.
Sure.
Hi, buddy. I'm Steve hey. Gross.
Hey, Steve. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. You're the podcast man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve is our senior Leonard. Manager of information technology here at the Seeing Eye, and fellow ham.
Mm-hmm.
KI2A.
And I'm KB5ELV.
Okay.
I believe we met over Jim's asterisk once.
Yes, oh. I think we did.
A lot of voices come out of that. It's a mysterious place. So what would you like to see, the server room?
Yeah, let's have a look.
Okay.
I'll let you go first. And
head out this way.
Good boy, Vegas.
And we're going to make a right turn through this door.
Sorry.
Good boy, Leno.
This is all our newly functioning offices down here. Actually, Jim, I would really like to have tours for the staff so they kind of see what's down here.
Well, I think that would be great.
Okay, this is a three-room complex. And
kind of forward.
You're in the first room, and this is the work room. So there's a big bench to your left that contains switches and computers and a printer and wires and all that kind of stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us a place to fix computers mostly, which we sorely lacked.
Right.
Now, to the left is a storage room, which isn't that exciting, except it's filled with all kinds of stuff. So we have printers, telephones, and switches, and cables, and all that kind of stuff. That's this room.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, above your head, a lot of conduit, because this was all built specially as part of the renovation. And the server room was moved. I don't know if you know that. So right. That was a major undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
I did explain that we were in the less suitable space.
Yeah.
Before.
All right, now we're going to turn around and go back to the server room, where, of course, it's going to be noisy. By the way, Jim, we have the electronic door lock on the outside of the server room,
great.
Which even you don't have permission to.
Uh-oh.
But I should add that. And we have, from the old days, a punch code, like the student dorms.
Yes.
Which I'm going to have moved to the IDF. So we have actually a smaller server room on the other side of the building underneath the student dorms.
And that other room is mostly a networking room that he's talking about.
Hmm.
Okay, that didn't
work. One of the things we put in as part of the renovation was over 20 wireless access points all over the campus. So everyone could easily get Wi-Fi for smartphones and tablets and laptops.
Okay, my door lock is timing out or something. So
so even our head of IT can't get into the server room.
It's a secure server room.
Right, I'm just demonstrating the security to you.
This is what you get for saying not even the president can get in the room.
Now we got it. Okay.
There we go.
So you'll immediately feel the coolness.
Yes.
So let me tell you, you're standing in a room that's about 20 feet by 15 feet. And directly in front of you is one of the, there's an axis with the air conditioner against the wall, and then two server racks and a wiring rack. And then at right angles to that, going off directly to your left, it's the same thing except it's two cabinets and one wiring rack. So the rack that's in front of you is the server side, data side. Mm-hmm. The rack to your left is the telephone side. And there's a narrow opening in between it, and then there's a desk with two monitors in the center of the room, where one of them is a KVM. I assume you know what KVM is. Yeah. You do tech, I'm sorry. So there's a KVM, so we can reboot the computers and all that from one place, which you can get to remotely. And then we just have another laptop to do stuff. And on the wall, which is all the way to the far left corner, is the usual, that's where our internet service comes in, that's where the alarm panel comes in, that's where the, we also have a, let me get it right, a PA system for the various buildings, and actually for Chester, the breeding station as well.
Oh.
So you tell me what kind of detail you want to know, or I could just go on spewing more facts.
Yeah, you've got this is where all of the web services and everything else runs.
Yes.
Web page or website and everything else.
So the official CNI website is here, which is going to a new host in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason mostly it's here is because the database, SCIS, which contains all the data for the CNI, all the students and the graduates and the dogs and the donors and the adopters and everyone you can think of, that's a SQL Server 2008 system.
Uh-huh.
And it's a dual node cluster failover thing. But it does a lot of other duty, and it also contains the website in a database. So if the SQL Server is down, the website doesn't come up. For good or for bad, that's what we have all collectively inherited.
Uh-huh.
We also have a Citrix server for outside access to the system, mm-hmm. an Exchange server for our own email, and then a bunch of, we have an Active Directory login server, we have some application servers for our financial applications, and the newest addition we have, which is not fully ramped up yet, is we have a NAS server. We actually have three of them. So there's one physically in this room with, I think it's got about 6 terabytes on it.
Oh,
it's real cool technology because it's just a row of hard drives.
Uh-huh.
You can stick them in and out at will, and it all configures and does itself. And Jim's happiness, it runs on Linux basically as its back end.
Oh, sorry,
we have one Linux server that we use for our intranet and for our Asterisk.
Yes.
And I'm thinking of putting Nagios on it, Jim.
Okay.
Because we need a Linux platform for that, but I haven't got to that point yet. By the way, if I could just tell a quick story on the side about that, that you'll appreciate.
We are on tape.
Oh, then I won't tell the story until later.
You can tell me later.
No, it's not a bad story. But I solved the puzzle that's been bothering us for the last couple of weeks. And I thought you'd appreciate it, because it's a surveillance thing.
Well, what Buddy and the listeners might find interesting was our fiber failure yesterday. We have a fiber circuit that goes out to our Chester breeding station, and all of a sudden, all of the phones and data in Chester stopped working. And I jokingly said to Steve, what happened? Did the deer chew through the fiber cable? Because Chester is out in a more rural area, the breeding center is in a more rural area, and there are many, many deer and other wild animals on the thing. So Steve laughed and said, no, he didn't think it was deer. But by the time we resolved the entire thing, it turned out it was wildlife. It was mice.
Oh.
And the mice had chewed through the fiber that Verizon provides heading into the building.
Whoops.
Right animal kingdom, wrong mammal.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'll just say a thing about that then as well, which is our internet setup, because that's also new to us in the last year. We used to have a 10 megabit service coming into this location, and then a 1 megabit point to point from here to the breeding station and from here to the downtown training center.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done now is we've changed that. We still have 10 megabits coming into this service, but the breeding station now has its own independent MPLS, as do the downtown training center. So we're all connected on a virtual internal network, but now they're getting 10 megabit service where they were not before. And that's real important because there's a lot of traffic between us and Chester.
Oh, sure.
You know, large files for one thing, data backup for another, and the ultimate plan is to use the diversity of location for backup. So the storage server that I was just talking about, where we have three of them, we have one physically in this room, one in the IDF, which is the mini data center on the other side of the building, and one in Chester. So we're going to hook it up so that the data that's from here is going to be replicated over the 10 megabit pipe down to Chester, you know, in case there's, God forbid, a fire or something in this location.
Right.
I should also mention, it's very important, that the phone service also is part of that connection. And that's what Jim meant a minute ago when the MPLS line that went down at Chester 2 days ago also carries the voice service. So while there is, and I was going to talk about the phone system, we have a switch here and a switch down there, and each side has its own voicemail, I believe. Yeah. If that line goes down, Chester can only call internally.
Ah.
And a lot of these things are legacy, which, as you're seeing now, have been improving over the last year or two or three.
Yes.
In terms of the data service and the server room and the whole deal. What else is for fun in here? We also have a monitoring system in here where we can track the temperature independently and whether people come in and out of the server room as well. The door gets opened or closed.
It stays locked.
Well, the truth is, while we've been in construction phase, the contractors all know the combination to the server room and they go in and out at will. And now that we are almost out of the construction phase, we're going to change that around. So, in fact, our wiring guy came in this morning and he couldn't get into the system and he had to go get Bud to unlock the door, which is the way it should be.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Steve.
You are welcome. I'm going to head out of here. I hope you can hear that.
Yeah.
Well, at least you have authentic data center background noise.
There you go.
Actually, to my chagrin, there's a big fan running in that room.
Oh, well.
Because the air conditioner's not going all that well, or it's heating the bottom and not the top, and then it shuts off.
Well, we did these weird weather days like today. I mean, it was in the 20s for several days, and now today it's 50-something.
Yeah.
We're walking along the outside of the dog park, the dog relieving area. Sidewalk and make a right.
Boy, Leno. Right. There you go.
Park is along the right. The HF antenna is stretched over this. Pretty much running the same parallel to the way we're walking right now. The antenna is. We're going to step off the curb forward and across the driveway here.
Leno, hop up. Good boy, forward.
There we go.
Good boy, Leno.
We're now off beyond the dormitory wing, across the driveway that's beyond the dormitory wing. And we're entering a building.
Hey, Jim. Hey, buddy.
Hey there. How you doing?
Hello. Found you again, buddy.
Yeah.
How about that?
We're entering a building called the Jinx Building, named after a donor from years ago. We're on the lower level of the Jinx Building, which houses the Human Resources Department and puppy placement, basically managing the puppy raisers. So let me do the door. There we go. On your left. One more. Here you go, Vegas. Good boy.
Yeah, I know.
Along this hall is Human Resources Department along the left. And hello, Howie.
Say hi to
you. Here to greet us, Howie? I got a visitor.
I know, come.
Hi, Howie. Howie is a puppy. There he is. Looking over the gate at us.
Oh, hello there. Well, he's a big puppy.
Howie's a puppy being raised.
Him is a big puppy.
Jamie, this is Buddy Brannon. And,
hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
His dog, Leno.
Leno, okay. And Lauren is also in here.
Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
Howie.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Buddy is doing a recording.
And where are you going?
A tour of our new renovations that can later be shared as a podcast. So you are live on the air.
Nice.
Wonderful. Live and direct. Yes.
Live and direct. Yes. So if we may, can we come in and show Buddy and the listeners a little bit about what we do in here?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Howie, can we join you? Huh?
Put him away. Come here, bud.
I'll let you get the gate. This is the gate to keep Howie in this office rather than wandering the halls. There we go. Now the gate is open. So
Leno,
this area is where the puppy development department works, and the puppy raisers can come here to pick up their puppy when they're about ready to start raising the puppy. Mm-hmm. They can, or we will deliver the puppy to them, and then at the end of raising the puppy, they can, if they wish to, bring the dog back themselves. And many of our puppy raisers find that a nice closure. It's sort of like taking your child off to college yourself rather than just putting him on a bus.
Right.
And so if we go a little further into the room here, we're going to go up a couple of stairs. Good boy.
I'm going to go upstairs.
Up here is all tiled. And this is tiled because often we don't have no puppies here today, right?
No, they left already.
They left
there
already.
There were a couple this morning.
All right.
Yeah.
So the puppies come here from the breeding station, tile floor because puppies aren't very good about being housebroken when they're 7 weeks
not.
Of age. We have a couple of areas in here set up like little living room settings, a couch, a coffee table, and it's a very comfortable environment for the puppy raisers to pick up their puppy and learn about it or to drop them off again at the end of the time, and meanwhile, several puppies can play in here while they're waiting to be picked up. What did I miss, Jamie? Come and join us.
Well, we also, behind you now and in front of Jim, we have the area coordinator space with some computer access, tons of workspace with the desks and, you know, their own printer. They can come on campus and do any kind of work that they need to get done. They can also, when they're here picking up their puppies, they can get all the paperwork set and ready to go. That way, when they get to the house, it's just puppy time and go over the manual and all of that. We also have some volunteers that come in, and they use this area as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it works out great. It's a nice space for computers.
As you heard earlier from Peggy Gibbon, the area coordinators are employees who normally work in their own territory. But when they do come to campus, periodically, they need a place to use a computer and catch up on things. And so that's that area.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice little space. It works out well. And, you know, sometimes we have donors that come who want to greet the puppies that they named. And every so often, you know, we'll roll up the little mat that's down here and get some nice little shots of them. And
there you go.
You know, it's a nice space for them to be able to do that, too.
Many of our staff members are themselves puppy raisers. And Jamie, mm-hmm. of course, is raising Howie that you just met.
Yes.
But how many have you done now?
Howard is our eighth.
Yeah. Wow.
And how old is he now? He's
on Monday. He'll be 10 months. So
wow, he's big.
Yeah, he's a big boy. He's got legs on him, that's for sure. He's quite tall.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a good boy. We are thoroughly enjoying him. And Lauren's also a puppy raiser, and her pup just graduated.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Great.
Well,
thank you.
All right.
Thank you for...
We'll
get out of your way.
Well,
hello.
Not in our
forward.
Way.
Forward.
Say bye, Howard.
Bye, Howard. See you.
Bye, Howie.
All right.
Have a great day.
You too.
So the rest of this lower level of Jenks includes a little break room for the staff that works here and a conference room behind you. Now we're turning left and that's a couple of mechanical rooms for the air conditioning for the, and heating for this building and up a staircase.
Good boy, Leno, upstairs. Go forward. Boy, Lennon, forward. There you go.
This building is built into the side of a bit of a hill, so although we entered the lower level on the ground floor, we're now going to exit the upper level also on the ground floor. But before we leave, this level, the upper level of the Jenks Building, houses the Administration and Finance Department and the Donor and Public Relations Department. So all of our folks working in those departments are in different offices around the rest of this floor. We have another conference room on this level for meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies, forward.
I'm going to go left. Forward. There you go.
More on your left.
Got it.
Good boy.
Hello.
So as we walked out of this level of Jenks, we were slightly lower on the grade, because again, this is a hill, but we were facing the Stabile Veterinary Clinic and Kennel area. And we are now getting ready to enter a enclosed
staircase that also includes the Douglas Roberts training escalator.
Oh, he got the escalator named after him. No, left.
Right here. I mean, left here.
Here's left, right, left, right here?
Yes, left, right here. So, we're at the bottom of stairs on your right and escalator on your left. The escalator is not running currently. We only run it when we're training dogs.
Ah.
It is a single escalator, mm-hmm. but since we have the controls, we can,
run make it
sometimes
either go up
in
or...
an up direction and sometimes in a down direction. And it was named after Douglas Roberts, our former head of the Instruction Training Programs Department, by another donor who donated the funds but then did not want to name the escalator after herself, wanted to name the escalator after Douglas Roberts. What this gives us is the ability to train dogs on escalators, obviously very important to those of us that use dogs. And we were down to only one store in downtown Morristown that still has an escalator. Many of the downtown stores have been renovated over the last couple of decades, and the escalators are disappearing. So we can train them here. We also find it convenient for the first trip on an escalator to have it be off. And it's very good for the young dogs to just get used to what it feels like on their paws and the fact that they're sort of in a tunnel at dog height. Mm-hmm. You know, their heads down within the sides of an escalator and so on. But you're welcome to walk up this. Vegas loves it. Every time we come in here, he takes the escalator rather than the stairs.
Let's go, Leno. Yeah, this one doesn't run, Leno. So you gotta walk.
You gotta walk it. And we're at the top now, and this, to our right, as we were walking up, is the two-level parking deck that we discussed earlier.
Ah.
So we're now at the top level of the parking deck, although we started at the bottom level.
So again, we'll be exiting on the ground floor.
So, yes. So if you exit up here, you are right at the front door of the Stabile Clinic.
Ah.
But we will, rather than do that, we'll go back downstairs, and Leno will have walked up and down the escalator for naught.
Here you go, Leno. Let's go.
Forward.
He jumped off of it like he thought it was running still.
There we go. The door opening out. That area is not heated or air-conditioned, but it does have windows, so it's out of the rain. And
there you go.
Also has enough natural ventilation that it works well in the summer.
So what else is in that building? Anything?
Nothing. That's just a staircase.
Okay.
It's to the right, this way. Right here, you can hear the echoes.
Yeah.
This is the lower level of the parking deck.
Uh-huh.
So we're under the upper level of the parking deck right now.
Okay.
And we can head on down and back into the main building, and that pretty much wraps it up.
Good deal.
So, except for walking the leisure path and for going into the Kirby Kennel Building, we have now seen it all.
Good deal.
And the only thing, the Kirby Kennel Building is like the Stabile Building, just more dog kennels in another building.
Well, yeah, we've seen that, so I think we're good.
All right.
Well, I appreciate the tour.
You bet. Wow. It's a pleasure to show you. Pleasure to show you around. There's another door. Good boy.
And left. Left. Good boy.
That's a good boy.
Here's a good boy, Leno.
Down.
Here we are.
Good boy.
Well, I'd like to personally thank you, buddy, for taking the time to do this. I know as someone who got to tour the American Printing House for the Blind in Louisville and record that, It is kind of a little bit nerve-wracking because you want to get everything right, but at the same time, there comes a point when you just sort of forget about the recorder and the microphones and you just become a part of what's going on, right?
Right, there's that. And then it's one other aspect of it that's nerve-wracking is that you don't want to be too loud and too obnoxious and whatnot, because then, you know, that's going to be recorded and you don't want to miss any of the important stuff. But then, like you say, you eventually you just kind of just go with it. And so there you go. But I want to thank Jim and the great folks at the Seeing Eye for allowing us to have the tour and for offering us some other perspectives on some of the jobs they do.
As always, feel free to write to us, resources@sarotalk.com. Let us know your thoughts or leave an iReport on iBlink Radio using your iOS or Android device. Reporting for the Sarotalk Podcast Network, I'm Jamie Pauls.